Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Today, we are joined by Kenya Jade Pinto, an Indo-Kenyan Canadian documentary photographer, filmmaker, and lawyer. She grew up chasing crabs on the Kenyan coast before moving to Alberta's foothills as a teen. Her hyphenated worldview informs her work, where she focuses on nonfiction and narrative projects that navigate themes of displacement, belonging, and access to justice. We are so excited to have Kenya Jade with us today.
Kenya Jade, we are so excited you have joined us today. This has been a long time in the making, and we are so, so happy to be having this conversation with you. We are just so appreciative that you're spending this time with us today. And we always start with the same question, which we would just love to hear in your own words, a little bit about how your career has evolved and taken shape over time.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. It's really nice to be here. How my career has evolved over time. I think for me, I didn't see the prototype or the archetype of who I wanted to be when I was in law school or even before that. So I kind of knew that I was going to be carving my own path pretty early on. I was at a crossroads before I had even applied to law school, thinking about whether I would do a master's in photojournalism or really focus on something that was visual. And I decided that law school was going to be more of something that could be like a toolkit. And I always, when I tell people about this, I always caveat that it is a very expensive toolkit. So, choose your path carefully. But I kind of knew that I was going to be navigating that space as something that was going to be, like a multi-purpose, thing for me. And I remember the first week of law school, we were all sitting in our small group and everyone was kind of asked, what do you want to do with your law degree? What kind of lawyer do you want to be? What do you want to do? And, there were folks in my class that had dreams of being in health law and wanting to parlay their biotech experience or wanted to go into public law. And I was amazed by all that. And I remember saying in that class that I didn't even know if I wanted to be a lawyer because I knew that I kind of wanted to do something a little bit different, which is shocking now because, there was a time in law school where my mind had shifted and I sort of felt maybe I should do the 5-year in law thing that everyone sort of suggests that you do. And I had a friend in my small group remind me when I was do I do this OCI thing? Do I should I be making the play for Goodman's? And then after 5 years, I can go and do what I want. And he was why? Who are you trying to impress? Remember what you said on the first day of school. And I think that that was something that was really refreshing along the way. Anyway, this is a ramble, but I knew all along basically that I was going to be kind of using my skill set in a different way. And I came to law school with a background in documentary photography. And then I just kept that up. And I made this promise to myself, knowing that if I was going not to go the visual route that I wanted to initially, that I would have to really make that a concerted effort. And so after 1L, I went off to the International Commission of Jurists with what was then Canadian Lawyers Abroad. And I also did some work with Photographers Without Borders. So that was the first time I was kind of doing both things at the same time and just made a concerted effort to keep doing that. And one thing sort of led to another and all intentional choices along the way, but that's how I've gotten where I am now.
Thank you for sharing that with us. It's so neat to look back at your career and see how law has played a role and how you were able to keep up your outside passion and simultaneously, feed that throughout law school and now sort of focus on it more now that you're outside of law. Formally, but how do you use your law degree now and what aspects of your legal career do you still use every day now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are elements of my law degree that I didn't think I would use that I have ended up using more of. The black letter law that everyone tells you is so important and you're like, I'm never going to use this. It turns out you actually use it. And in my life now as a producer, I am often, you know, thinking pretty critically about contracts and liability and, you know, law school sort of just tweaks your brain in that way. It's also just really, I think it's really gotten me into the habit of framework thinking. So I think about like creative work in frameworks. I do a lot of research now to help other filmmakers on their projects. So editorial and visual research. I recently worked on a documentary about a wrongful conviction that is going to come out soon that was really law heavy. And, you know, my law degree was exactly why I think I was the person who could help on that project. And I didn't know when I was in law school that, you know, taking criminal law was going to allow me to be helpful in that way, but it did. And so it really is like the cornerstone of many of the projects that I work on. And as a freelancer, as someone who works in the visual space, I do tend to wear a lot of hats. So I feel like having a law degree has really, yeah, like I said, it's a bit of a backbone for me now. And I maybe didn't see it back then, or I didn't understand like the extent of how I could be using it. Yeah. And, you know, and entertainment law as well. I didn't think that I would be, you know, thinking through how to negotiate contracts or understand the ins and outs of the tax credit system in Ontario. But yeah, it's been helpful.
So something that I selfishly would love to know before kind of diving more into like your specific projects, I feel like, and I don't know, this is either going to be so embarrassing for me that I'm asking this question, or people are going to think, oh, I also don't know what that means. So if it's embarrassing for me, I'm willing to take the loss. But when people talk about being a producer or an associate producer on a film or a project, what does that actually mean?
That is a great question. I always joke that you are, you know, circus clown, because you do a little bit of everything. But realistically, a producer, you know, at a very high level is the business person behind a film. So you have your creative folks. I also live in that space some of my time. And then you have your like business folks. And sometimes those worlds can blend. You can have folks who are creative producers. And so as a producer, you're usually the person who's like tasked with getting the film funded and then making sure all the logistical mechanics that need to happen to make the film happen. An associate producer is someone who's basically tasked with one or more functions of a producer and sits in the hierarchy of things under a producer. So you have your top line producer who might be responsible for all the things, and then the associate producer would be delegated tasks. On Scarborough, for example, that was how I worked with Shasha Nakai, who was our producer at Compi Films. And that experience just grew out of starting off as what was a comms role for me. I was helping with social media in the beginning. And then my role just grew and grew as the production needed it to, because we were a micro budget and we needed, you know, to sort of make things happen. But also I just kept showing up in a really meaningful way and just trying to learn and make mistakes and be someone who was useful and not get in the way and help them do their best work. And I think that along the way, they saw and valued that and gave me more and more important tasks. And by the end of it, I was like, you know, buying ice cream for kids to make sure that they were happy on set and, you know, making sure the contracts were good to go, drafting COVID policies, driving folks. You know, if you watch the film, I'm an extra. So really like a little bit of everything. And in that way, Scarborough was my film school. So I'm super grateful to that experience. And yeah, that's what a producer does, usually a little bit of everything.
Okay, that makes me feel a lot better. So I appreciate the full recap. And so Scarborough, an amazing film school to go to, one that you don't necessarily apply in the same ways, but very neat, because for anyone that doesn't know, this film is so critically acclaimed. It was recognized at TIFF and the Canadian Screen Awards, among others. And that's just sometimes it's, you know, it's not about the recognition, but it's like nice to be recognized and like see a project really soar. And so you've talked a little bit about your experience on the project, but how has that experience really informed your work in film and the industry moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I think I came to Scarborough with this background working on stories that were focused on, you know, displacement, belonging, and access to justice. And I had the benefit of having carved out a legal background and education and refugee human rights and international law that let me build a bit of like a mission and a vision statement. So when Shasha asked me, you know, would you like to come on to Scarborough, it felt like this totally aligns with who I am and what I want to do in this world. And then, you know, similarly moving forward from that project, I think I've realized the value of collaboration and what it means to make things with good people. We are having a lot of talks, a lot of conversations in our industry about what it means and what it looks like to have a sustainable career, whether that's like financial sustainability or mental health, or, you know, just finding ways to just make the thing keep working. And for me, that's working with good people and being part of teams that care for one another, that, you know, lead with care first. And that looks, I think, different on every production. And I learned a lot of that on Scarborough. It wasn't perfect. It was a micro budget. We made mistakes along the way. But at the heart of it, it was just a group of people who really, really cared. And I think that that is something that I want to keep doing as much as I can, just working with great people who care about each other and who aren't afraid to break the hierarchy when we need it, to have hard conversations, but then respect one another enough to know how to best support each other in those hierarchical spaces as well. So, yeah.
If you listen to this podcast and think, wow, Erin spends way too much time on TikTok, then that's absolutely accurate. But I do have a story from TikTok to go with every comment, I swear. But I was just watching a TikTok and they were saying something about like your managers or the people you work with have like more of an effect on your mental health than like your therapist can have on you sometimes. And it's like, it's so true because you spend like what, like an hour, if you have the privilege of having resources and access to a therapist, then you spend like an hour with them versus like 40 to 60% of your freaking week with the people that you work with. And so it's just such a testament to you to say like, you know, I'm going to seek out good people and I'm going to prioritize that and ensure that I'm surrounding myself with people that have a positive effect on me and my work. And I think that that's just such an important lesson. And it's really easy to, I don't know, you know, think, okay, well, it's okay, I'll just deal with this because I really need this project, or I really want to like, you know, tough it out or whatever, whether it's in law or in a visual career or any other career. But I think that that's a really important message to make sure that you are carving out space for your people and prioritizing that when you're looking for work.
I think that's a universal truth too, right? Like, I think, you know, for me in the beginning, there is this fear, whether you're starting out as a lawyer or you're starting out a career in anything, I think there's this fear, especially in freelance, that you kind of have to say yes to everything because you don't know when it'll dry up, or, you know, you don't know if you really have the privilege to say no. And so it's certainly a privilege to be able to say, okay, like I really just want to seek out great people and I don't have to say yes to everything. And so for me, creating this like mission vision statement for myself was something that really helped align that so that I didn't feel like I had to say yes to everything, because if I was going to say yes to something that didn't fall in the mission and vision that I set out for myself, well, then it had to have a really good case for it. So I think that, you know, that's something that I talk to a lot of young folks who are trying to figure out, oh, like, how do I make a path out of a path that wasn't there? And then how do I do it sustainably? I don't know that I'm doing it perfectly, but I know that if I can just try to corral all of the things into something that makes sense, into like a kind of a framework, then I can know when something doesn't do like a gut check, that it also doesn't do a framework check, and that it probably is a no. But yeah, it's a total privilege and it takes time. Cause sometimes you just got to say yes to things so you can pay your rent.
Yep, that's true. The bills do keep coming.
They do be coming. Yeah.
King Jade, I have a quick question because I would love if you could clarify this a little bit for everyone listening and also for us selfishly. So one thing you did say yes to was fully becoming a lawyer and getting called to the bar. And so obviously like that must have been a moment in time decision for you as well to like go through that process, obviously like writing the bar exams, articling. So at what point did you sort of remove yourself from formal practice to pursue your other endeavors? And how did you decide like where you wanted to embark on like your licensing term?
Yeah, that's a really great question because I did, like most people I think who don't practice traditionally, wrestle with the idea of whether or not to get called to the bar because it is such an onerous task, right? And you know, you're making a sacrifice in that whatever 3 months or whatever it is, however long it takes. For me, I think it's helpful to back up a little bit. I mentioned earlier, I did my first summer interning at Canadian Lawyers Abroad, what was then called Canadian Lawyers Abroad, what's now called Level Justice. And they're a human rights organization based out of Toronto, who at that time were doing international internships. I was lucky enough to be invited back to do my articles there. And that was when I kind of knew, oh, like I'm probably not going to go to Bay Street. I'm probably not going to be, you know, your traditional kind of lawyer. But what was really cool about that opportunity was Brittany Twiss, who was my articling principal at the time and who I have so much respect for. She saw the value in visual storytelling for the nonprofit. And when she brought me on to article, I said, well, I have this background in, you know, documentary photography and storytelling, and I would love to be able to incorporate that into my articles. And so over the course of the year and a half that I was there, that's what we did. And we, you know, I was working with the Indigenous Youth Outreach Program, and we were working on justice education for and with Indigenous youth. And I was able to kind of help elevate the organization's storytelling in that way. And so I was integrating my articles with my visual practice, and then I kind of knew, you know, I was studying for the bar at the same time. And I felt like, man, I spent all this time in law school and I didn't want to come out of it and feel like I had like left something on the table somehow. And the thing that kept coming back to me was that I really wanted to be able to work with the Refugee Sponsorship Support Program. That was initially why I went to law school too. My migration story is sort of the cornerstone of my own personal narrative, and it's what brought me to the University of Ottawa in the first place. And so I just kept thinking, like, I have to pass the stupid solicitors because I want to work with this program. And if I don't pass it, I won't be able to. And so that was like the thing that like I kept saying. And I'm really glad that I did it. You know, it's and I have been able to work pro bono and to volunteer with them. But it was a bummer. I did not enjoy studying for the bar. And then there are days, Piper and Erin, where I still, like just last week, I was like, should I write the California bar? And my partner's like, do you want to do that? And I'm like, who knows? You know, maybe I want to keep a door open. So I think it's also, I try to live in a way that's like, I don't want to unnecessarily close doors for myself, but I don't also want to like be knocking down doors that I don't want to go through. So there's always this kind of negotiation, I think, that's happening along the way. And then for me, you know, in film, I don't know what the future holds. Like I want to keep making films. I want to work on important photography stories, but who knows, maybe one day I will want to be the person who gets to decide what gets greenlit. And I think it might be helpful to have, you know, be called to the bar, to be someone who could be called upon to sit at a table like that. And so, yeah, I'm just consciously trying to think of the long game, you know, the medium term game and then the short game along the way. And, you know, sometimes it's like confusing and annoying and overwhelming, definitely overwhelming, but yeah, that's kind of how I try to make those kind of game time calls and decisions.
Yeah. And can you tell us a bit more about how you're able to continue to work and do pro bono work, even though you don't have your full license status at this time? Because I didn't even know that that was an option. And I think that that's such a neat way that you're able to continue the really important work that like led you to want to go to law school and balance it with like your passion and, you know, other interdisciplinary art projects.
Yeah. So I was called to the bar and then immediately dropped my license down to an L1, which means that I pay partial fees. I think it's 25%. Love you, Law Society, but your girl cannot afford. So I dropped down my license to that level. But what that meant was that I think your license is then restricted. So if you want to be able to practice, you need what's called like a permit to do so. And in the pro bono context, because I have previously worked and was working with the Refugee Sponsorship Support Program, they were really helpful in helping me secure a permit to be able to work with them. So yeah, that is one way to do it. And then, you know, you can always, I had heard this rumor, maybe I shouldn't be spreading rumors on your podcast, but I had heard this rumor that if you, let's say you don't pay any licensing fees at all, because we drop down to completely non-practicing, then if you wanted to re-enter, you'd have to pay these back years. You'd have to pay. Is that true? Okay.
Anyway. I'm nodding as if it is true, but I also have heard this rumor. So I feel like two hearings of the rumor, it's like, you know, two wrongs don't make right.
Right.
Like two rumors do make a truth.
Yeah.
I just made that up, but yeah, kind of. Maybe potentially. Yeah. Don't take our word for it.
No, just do your due diligence, everyone. But I had heard this rumor. And then I remember, I think I looked it up and I was like, this seems fishy. I probably should just pay the bare minimum to get by so that if I wanted to rejoin, they wouldn't like penalize me. So that's what I did.
I totally understand that. I have had many iterations of holding licensees with different law societies in my brief stint of practicing / non-practicing law. Now I like to say I am retired.
I like it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. But I did just get an email from the Law Society of Manitoba reminding me that because I did practice in the year 2022, I have to submit a full member report by April 1st. So I'm not looking forward to completing that, but nonetheless. So we have covered so much ground and we like so appreciate all the interesting perspectives you have, because I think that you talk about so many things that people didn't like otherwise know existed, like that those options didn't exist, whether like in the legal career or beyond. And I just think personally, like it's so, and I feel like this word sometimes like gets a bit of a bad rap. So like, pardon me, but like, it was so brave of you when you were in law school to say like, actually, I don't know if I want to be a lawyer, because I felt like when I was in law school that I couldn't say that. And I wanted to so badly. And I think like the fact that you were just like, actually, I don't think this is for me, but I'm going to like give it a full shot. Is just incredible. I know that Erin has a question that she is dying to ask you about one of the projects you've worked on. So I'm going to pass it over to her, because I know that this is like very much, she selfishly and excitedly wants to hear a bit more about it.
Yes, I fully was like, okay, I do put together the questions, and then Piper just double checks that I haven't asked too many probing questions just for my own interest. But this one made it through. So what was the greatest takeaway from the Nat Geo Story Summit? Because I just think that is so cool. I love National Geographic, and I think that's like the coolest thing. And I remember looking on your LinkedIn and you had like your little badge, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I need to know more. So super selfishly, I just would love to hear more about that experience.
Yeah. When will your podcast come out? Because I'm like, maybe I can give you a little exclusive on something, but I don't know if I can, if I don't know when it comes out.
We can tailor that. When's the cutoff date for?
I think I'll just tell you, because I think it's coming out pretty soon. Okay, so okay. I'll give you. You'll be the first to know. For context, I started working with National Geographic. And when I say working with National Geographic, I mean National Geographic Society granted me some money to work on a project. And so the National Geographic Society and National Geographic are separate, but together, if that makes sense. And so I've been working on this project for the last few years, and we are going to be exhibiting it at the end of March at the Berkman Klein Institute at Harvard. So it's a series of photo stills from a project looking at the impact of technology on people who are crossing borders. So that's kind of my affiliation with National Geographic, and I would be happy to drop some bombs in the show notes for folks if they want to check that out. But from the summit, this was my first time attending the summit in person, and I didn't really know what to expect. What I can say, it was sort of like Disneyland for photographers. I mean, sort of everyone who's who was there in terms of my heroes, people I really admire, people I've been following a long time. And it was sort of surreal just to be able to be around that and to be in the room and to be one of, you know, like a peer and not, you know, a fan, even though I am a fan. So what really stood out to me there was, you know, I'm part of a group called Women Photograph, and we're sort of a contingent of women and non-binary photographers from across the world. And it was the first time I had gotten the opportunity to connect with everybody in person. And just a really good reminder that, you know, I think when we make these decisions to have, you know, what's like quote unquote alternative career path, it can feel very lonely and also isolating, because some of your decisions feel nonsensical. Like, you know, there's a lot of risk and gamble in working on something that, you know, that takes years to work on and may not see the light of day or may not have the impact you want it to, because you have just a passion for it and you want it to be alive and you want people to see it and understand it and feel something about it. So it's good to be around my people, you know, people who are like similarly self-deluded in their professional lives and how they make decisions along the way. I obviously say that facetiously and a bit jokingly, but there is this feeling of like, you know, you're making risky decisions. And I think something that I haven't talked about that I think is also important for your listeners to know is that when you make decisions like this, you have to make pretty calculated and take pretty calculated risks, which is that, you know, a really obvious one for me is that I didn't have a lot of help financially going into law school. So I took out a huge loan and I will be paying that for a very long time. And that's a reality, right? And so I think people have to make hard decisions along the way. And that was one of the hard ones that I made. And there's a lot of privilege in also having debt. So, you know, it's a very complicated thing, but I think also worth people considering what that looks like. So I always say, make a plan, make an A plan, make a B plan, make a C plan. But yeah, National Geographic was great. Highly recommend checking out the museum if you're in DC. And yeah, my project will be coming to the Berkman Klein Institute on March 28th.
That's so exciting. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Like, congratulations. That's huge. And anyone that's listened to the podcast knows that like Erin and I are just like, we won't shut up about law school student debt. Like, I honestly think that we started the podcast because of law school student debt, not because the podcast pays us money, but because just be like really clear.
Be clear.
to be clear, this is not like, you know, anything like that. But because we wanted to talk about things like that. And one of the first things we did was like this massive, I mean, I say massive, I think it was like 7 or 8 episodes about student debt. And it's funny because I forget, I think I saw like a meme on Instagram a few weeks ago about student debt. And then I went back and I like listened to one of the episodes with someone that we'd recorded with Carly about student debt, because I just like needed to feel a little bit less alone about it in the moment. So I went back and listened to our own podcast. But like, I totally know what you mean. And like the taking the calculated risks, especially when you're carving your own path, is so scary. And so amongst like all of those giant leaps and bounds, I'm sure that there have been like a few falls that maybe people haven't seen. And so what might you describe or view as one of the greatest setbacks or like falls you've experienced amongst all of those leaps?
Yeah. I think the obvious one that, you know, everyone can probably relate to is COVID. I think for me, that came at a time when I was already feeling like I was behind in my quote unquote, like visual and film career, because I was coming from law. And so felt like I had a lot of catching up to do. So the fact that the world had stalled, it really didn't work with my plan, guys. but it also made me kind of like recalibrate and be able to do some of the digging on some of the questions you asked at the beginning, which is, you know, what is it that helps me make decisions about the work that I do, which is working with great people, and using this mission and vision statement that I've carved out for myself to be able to make good choices along the way. But yeah, I think, you know, COVID stalled us on Scarborough. We had 5 days of shooting left. We had to cancel all of those on a micro budget. That's a huge, it's a huge hit. And it also meant that we couldn't have the number of people on set that we wanted to. We didn't know how we were going to do it. We actually didn't even know if the film was going to get finished. It meant that, you know, when we were invited to TIFF, which was amazing, it was a hybrid year. So there weren't that many seats in the room, and it was hard because, you know, we wanted everyone who was part of the community who helped make the film to be in that room. And so it was really hard to make a film about like being super inclusive and then be in an environment where we couldn't be. So COVID was definitely really challenging, and recalibrating, and all of the things that I think we've read in think pieces and also reflected on in our own daily lives. And, you know, I think I'm always trying to be better at context switching, because since I wear a few different hats, I have to be really careful that I'm not wearing all of the hats in one day. For example, because I find that I'm not able to be a lawyer in the morning and a photographer in the afternoon, and that, you know, and then produce something in the evening. So I have to be really mindful about how and when I spend my time on things, which I think COVID taught me. I mean, I think for a lot of us, maybe I should just speak for myself. I felt like I couldn't do as much. I just didn't have the same capacity. So now I don't, instead of beating myself up about that fact or being like, oh, well, like Elon Musk gets up at 4 a.m. Not that I ever use him as a benchmark. I don't know why I said that, but you know what I mean. All the like 4 a.m. think pieces, et cetera, et cetera. I don't, you know, I just don't, I try not to put a weird benchmark on things. And instead I just accept and I just do my best work, whatever that looks like. Meet my deadlines and just do my best work that I can. And, you know, so far it's working out.
It's so funny you mentioned that 4 a.m. thing, because today, literally this morning, Aaron sent me, is this what you were going to say, Aaron?
I knew you were going to bring this up. Yes.
Aaron sent me a reel on Instagram, which she does often. And I watched it, and the first 30 seconds, I was kind of a little freaked out, because it was like this guy, I don't know who it was, but it was this guy on a podcast, and he was probably someone who would probably keep company with the person that you named. And he was talking about, you know, like, I have 21 days in my week, like, because from 6 a.m. to noon, that's one day. And then from noon to 6 p.m., that's another day. And then from 6 p.m. to midnight, that's another day. And I was like, what? I was like, Aaron, why are you sending this to me? And then the second half of the reel was somebody making fun of that. And I just thought, okay, yeah. So I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, something that I've really had to learn as an adult is that we all have a different level of capacity. And sometimes our capacity changes over like different periods of time or like different phases in our life. And I think that that's okay. And I think like, just because like two people's capacities might look different at any given point doesn't make one person like inherently good or the other person inherently bad, because as much as I'm trying to unlearn it, our worth is like not dependent on our productivity. And so that's, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
Totally. Yeah. I think I had to unlearn it after, I had to do a lot of unlearning after law school, and relearning. And I think that's been one of the key ones, which is, you know, busy work is not good work. And I'm really trying to focus on deep work when I can. But that's not, you know, I'm still checking out the TikTok. I'm still checking out the reels. So, you know, there are distractions along the way.
It's like filmmaking in a different sense.
Oh, I love, you know, that's generous.
It's research.
It's research. Yes, it is. It is. One must know what's happening in the general zeitgeist if one is to, you know, put stuff out there. So.
Yeah. So, okay. First of all, I love that busy work is not deep work. I'm going to like get that tattooed on my wrist. I love that. But speaking of, you know, sort of, you know, taking control of your schedule and carving out time for yourself, how do you take care of your mental health, especially when you're working on a whole bunch of different projects, like you said, and wearing a lot of different hats? How do you make sure that you're taking care of yourself as well?
This is a good question. I don't do this perfectly, and I'm always, you know, changing up the alchemy of what this looks like for me. I build in a lot of rest when I can. And, you know, a really good example was even today. You know, I was on set all day yesterday. I got up really early this morning to turn around some things. And then I had a nap this afternoon, and I had a lot of, you know, internalized guilt still, even though I make my own schedule. The fact that I was like taking some time off in the middle of the day made me feel some type of way. And so I, before I took my nap, was like, why am I feeling this way? And I'm like, right, it's because I've been routine, like it's just been a routine that I never really do that. And so just, I think taking the time to be honest about what feels good and what doesn't feel good with myself has been important. And then I am really lucky to have a really great support system. I have an amazing partner. We have a little wiener dog. I distract myself with all of her shenanigans. She forces me to be outside at least twice a day. She has friends, wiener dog friends. Last night, her wiener dog friend Joey was over for dinner. We had Valentine's Day for them, where we made them pasta. So, you know, like,
Kevin and Joey had a pasta date.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That is the cutest thing I've ever heard of.
It was a dog friendly pasta with that. You know, this dog maybe ate better than I did. It was a dog friendly pasta with quinoa, beets, turkey, and creme fraiche in the form of Greek yogurt. So they had a good time. You know, there was, you can feel free to cut this out, but there was some humping. I saw it happen and I let it slide. I was like, it's Valentine's Day. You do you. But yeah, no, these kinds of things, you know, like silliness, lightness, a lot of my work, we haven't really dived into it, but a lot of my work is actually really heavy because it's so focused on like access to justice and a lot of really hard topics. So I try to fill my life with lightness and remind myself of, beauty and just stay grounded in that way. And, yeah, this is an evolving practice. Also, yesterday I was shooting all day and my back is killing me. So I booked a massage, you know, these kinds of like physical things that one must do, especially in their 30s, to make sure the body runs. I do all of those things. And I'm also really lucky in Toronto to have an amazing support system of women like who work in the industry with me. And I think that's like, If Toronto ever makes me feel like this city is unfriendly in its housing policy, in its mayoral indiscretions, in whatever it is, it's my people who are here that hold me down. So I always remind myself of that. And I have like a, you know, a close group of folks who are friends and also in industry who I feel like I can always go to kind of just, yeah, work through things with. But yeah, this is an evolving practice. I think it's hard just to, you know, keep space for, you know, be asserting boundaries and keep space for mental health and make sure that you're sustainable in your life, because I think that's, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah.
I joke that like being an adult is a bit of a scam. Like it's so much harder.
It totally is.
It's so much harder than like anyone ever said it would be, or at least what I envisioned growing up. And I think the sustainability piece that you're talking about is so crucial, especially because you work with like really, like you carry very important stories and you tell very important stories and you like showcase these really important narratives. And then you also similarly like did work with similar like groups in your practice and in your pro bono work. And that's a lot to carry. And I think like as well, I attended a conference with work a little while ago, and they were talking a lot about like intergenerational workforces. And, you know, millennials get such a bad reputation. But I think that like there's something to learn from every generation. But something I think that's so neat about millennials, and I'm speaking not from a place of research, just from a place of speaking. But what's so neat about millennials is like, I feel that we tend to change jobs far more than previous generations who like maybe had one job and stayed at it. And you still see that today, like with law firms. And this is not a slight at anyone that does this, chooses to do this, or is doing this right now listening. But you see people who, you know, joined a firm, articled with the firm, and now it's 25, 30, 35 years later, they're with the same firm. And that's great. Like if you found a place you love, like stick with it, but that's more and more uncommon. So whether you move from firm to firm or you move out of practice, and then once you're out of practice, you do a whole lot of different things. I think that that's like something that's interesting and fun and like fulfilling, but also like the sustainability piece is so important, like you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I always say, like, I never throw shade or have any judgment for people who chose to go the big law route. I mean, we get your bag. We are all coming out with debt. And, you know, I think everyone is making decisions that are best for them. And that's great. And I know, like, some of my closest friends are in big law and they're great at their jobs. And it's so cool to see. And I'm like, get it. But I think the thing, you know, when you choose your own adventure, and you're making this career path and it's, you know, it feels somewhat ad hoc, I think, and I keep going back to this, and I think it's starting to sound trite probably to your listeners, but whatever, I'm going to say it again, is preparing a plan for yourself that makes it so that, you know, everything does feel very intentional. Because if you look at the corpus of your work as a larger mosaic that's tied to a few different pillars or to things that are important to you, then it makes it easier to kind of move through that more gracefully than if you were to say, like, if you were doing gig after whatever. I don't know that I've like perfectly nailed down the art of that, but I think it is really helpful. And also, you know, from a professional standpoint, to be able to talk about your narrative and to have ownership over your work in that way, but then also like on a personal level to feel fulfilled daily, to know that, you know, even if you didn't do the most best, most awesome thing that day, that it's all sort of feeding into a larger goal. And I think that that's just what's a bit different, right? Is if you work in big law or you work in a job that, you know, you go in every day and the pinnacle of success will be making partner, or after you make partner, whatever comes next. That might not exist if you are creating a mosaic of a career. So how do you set those benchmarks along the way? And then how do you meaningfully make moves toward those goals without sacrificing the others? It's a art and not a science. But I think that the more you can, I think, wrap your head around that, the easier it is to navigate something that's very ambiguous.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Kenya Jade. You have, it's been just, I don't know, such a joy to speak with you. And not only have we learned a lot from you, you have like the most soothing and calming voice. Like I could just listen to a podcast. I don't know if that's on your radar. So
I love a sleep source.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I don't want to listen to this podcast to fall asleep to because like it's full of a lot of wisdom. But if you just could tell me like a sleep story from like Calm or something like that, that would just be lovely. Cause it's just so nice chatting.
I always joke that I have like the Jazz 95 voice.
Yeah.
not a bad voice to have. So very jealous.
Oh, thank you. That's kind. So thank you.
We like to end the podcast with the same question, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
Oh, what is something new that I've learned recently? One of my jobs is I was lucky enough to be invited on the admissions committee of Toronto Metropolitan University, the Lincoln Alexander School of Law. And so I've been reading a lot of law school applications, which is very cool because I'm like looking under the hood of what the next crop of lawyers is going to look like and what they want to do with their lives. And, you know, I think the future of law is bright. I think we're going to be in good hands. So I think, you know, some of the things that we've been talking about today, folks are thinking about earlier on in their career and are open-minded to a world that is evolving and changing and want to use their skills in different ways. And it's been really cool to be able to do that job because I can just tell that it's going to be great. There's a lot of really great folks coming up.
That's so cool. And I think also that reading the admissions files at TMU would be especially neat because they've really carved out a niche of like a different kind of law school. And so I don't know what their admissions process looks like specifically, but I'm sure that it's just innovative and neat and attracting a really like certain type of potential student. King and Jade, this has been an absolute joy. We are so grateful that you spent this time with us today, and we are so looking forward to following along with your storied career and all of the incredible paths that you continue to take. It's just so inspiring to see someone choose their own adventure, carve out their own path, make a niche for themselves, and do it with such like, obviously, we've only known you for this conversation, but like Erin and I have been lucky to see your work in passing and intentionally online. And I feel like you do it with this like calm confidence that you know what you're doing and you're choosing the things that you choose and you're making an impact with everything you do, no matter what it is. And so it's just so inspiring. And we're so grateful for your work and for joining us today. Thank you so much.
Gosh, thank you so much. It's so sweet. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to share. I, like I said, it's often in a silo and I'm often working in different places. And so it's just nice to kind of have a place to come back to share a little bit of it all at once. So thank you for your curiosity.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. To stay up to date with the podcast, follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite listening platform for a brand new episode of Off the Tracks Podcast every Tuesday.